Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
On this station.
And good morning, I'm Rich Lyons. It's afternoon.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I'm Rich Lyons. This is Ask an Atheist, and we need your help. We want to be the best in Western Washington because we know we are the best in Western Washington. But we need you to vote for that, right, Sam?
Absolutely. King 5 is having their annual Best of Western Washington sort of fandango. I don't know what you'd call it.
It's a major contest.
Oh,
it's something they do every year where people get to brag about being the best pizza restaurant, the best tanning salon, and in this case, the best local podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a distinct possibility that the best podcast in Western Washington is about The Godless. And last time we checked, we were in second place, but those statistics have since been clouded, and today is the very last day you can vote. So if you haven't voted yet, now would be the time.
Yes. And you don't actually have to be in Western Washington. Yes, it sounds like it's uber local, but the truth is, if you have a computer and you have the ability to push buttons, you too can help us win this award.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Best of Western Washington, which is a section of a section of the country, but they actually encourage that nationwide voting occur, especially in these categories. So,
and if you're one of the people who listens to Deanna and myself on Living After Faith, we are endorsing your vote for Ask an Atheist because they are a much broader Ask an Atheist. When we're on here, we're addressing the atheist community at large and actually addressing the theist community as well, where the Living After Faith podcast is for a pretty narrow niche of just the atheist community.
Right.
So what we're doing is encouraging you to vote for Ask an Atheist because that is an opportunity where we can all be winners.
Yeah, when we all do work together. So I mean, I certainly believe when you work with, you know, working with us is working with Living After Faith. We're all a big happy family here. We all hang out. We all go to each other's apartments and have drinks. So hey,
yeah,
you know.
So if you've been convinced by what we've had to say, please go to our website, askanatheist.tv. There's a little button at the top of the screen where you can go vote. Please, please, please take 3 seconds and vote for us.
And we are a call-in show, so the number is 253-584-1480.
And we have from our – I did the worst thing you could do on the radio. I forgot the name of the program. The first
– Oh, the first segment.
First segment.
Oh, it's Scripture Says
Scripture Says What?
Yeah, this is a look at the bizarre, the funny, and the just plain weird stuff in our holy books, not just the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran – you name it. This one today comes from listener Brad in Japan.
And listener Brad in Japan is quoting this from Malachi, which for your trivial pursuit question, Malachi is the book where preachers preach tithing from.
Oh, okay.
That's the book. I mean, the only time you ever hear him preach from Malachi, you know you better reach for your wallet because it's going to happen before you're done. But here's your – and this quote doesn't really have anything to do with tithing. It's got more to do with poo.
Yay!
With poo.
And you.
Oh, wow.
And now you're priests. This warning is for you. I'll read it as a preacher. If you do not listen and you do not resolve to honor my name, says the Lord Almighty, I will curse you. And I will put a curse. I lost my place. This day is not starting too well for me. And I will curse your blessings. Yes, I have already cursed them. Because you have not resolved to honor me. Because of you, I will rebuke your descendants. I will smear on your faces the dung from your festival sacrifices.
Wow.
And you will be carried off with it.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm damp.
I'm
wow. That was pretty amazing.
That's a way to get...
that gets people's attention. Oh, first yes. thing, I festival sacrifices. I've never... is that something people do? Is that?
Oh, yeah, that's a... Yeah, that's
okay.
Totally Old Testament.
So they get together and...
They do sacrifices for everything.
While they're on the tilt-a-whirl, they sacrifice a lamb? Is that how that works?
Yeah. The Tilt-A-Whirl is kind of difficult, but the merry-go-round, it's pretty easy. And that's where they got the Virgin Mary's name anyway, from the merry-go-round.
Got it.
And Merry Christmas, that's her last
this
name.
Rosette of buckets around the merry-go-round to sort of catch the things as they fly on.
You know, it's pretty interesting when you read about the building of the temple, how they build the trenches for the blood to flow down and everything. It's pretty amazing the detail they went to for this.
So, into that same level of detail, I'm kind of curious about the dung here. it says the dung from the festival sacrifices. Are we talking about this is from the line of porta-potties that are always on the outside of every festival? No, we're talking about animal feces here.
See, that's where you would have to get a priest to give you clarification, because my initial would be from your festival sacrifices would refer to the animals. So we're going to sacrifice a bull, so we're going to bring the poo from that bull right before we sacrificed him.
Oh, wow.
Or is it from the porta potties during the festival?
Oh,
see a lot more of that, though.
There would be much more.
Yeah, well, what would be more disturbing? I don't know. Well, I guess if you're a hunter, it would be the people poo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the other stuff can attract animals, so, not, you know, it would work. But
yeah.
If you really want to get in people's cases, I think it would be the people poo.
Yeah, on your face. That's pretty.
Because then it's like the crowd is attacking you, too.
Yeah.
But at the very least, this does kind of have the smell of bullcrap on it.
And it raises God to the level of one of those monkeys in the zoo throwing poo at people for aggravating it.
Yeah.
And not just throwing it, but actually rubbing it in somebody's face, like, you know, hitting him in the face with a pie.
And it does sort of cast God in sort of a frat movie, in a way. I mean,
I'm gonna poo in your face for messing with me.
Yeah, Van God, I guess. I don't know.
We get emails.
Oh, we do. Yes,
from Steve, and the idea behind this one is not can you debunk his argument here. The argument here is how long does it take? So we're gonna do this Jeopardy style.
Uh-oh.
Gentlemen, have your buttons.
Yeah.
And let me hear your buzzer, Sam. Let me hear. Okay. And I'm going to read it, and when you know the answer or think you know the answer, buzz in.
Glasses are off.
Okay, are we ready, guys?
Yep.
Ready.
I'm an atheist, first off, but someone recently posed this to me, and I had no response for it. First off, this sounds to me.
I almost wanted to go, write it, I'm an atheist. You know, just
yeah, the I immediately see a problem here.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
What I'm hearing is the same thing, like, doctor, I have a friend who has this rash.
Exactly.
It sounds like a passive-aggressive Christian.
Oh, we're back in the rectum area again, aren't we? Is that what this is about?
It's all about the rectum.
Yeah, this is absolutely a theist who's throwing this out there.
Okay.
They're saying, I'm an atheist, but...
Right.
And
yeah, I have a friend who stumped me with this really hard question.
Yeah, now, okay, get your buzzers ready.
All right, continue on, Mr. Comfort.
Reset your buzzer, Mike.
Okay.
Very good. Was wondering if you guys could help me out with this. A friend of mine's friend said that, why would the 12 disciples die for a lie?
Oh.
Sam is buzzed in.
Well, clearly they didn't think it was a lie. Why would they die for a lie? A lot of people have died for lies. Do you want to do 20th century? We could start with that's 19th century, but we could start with World War I and move forward. Clearly, if there's two sides in an ideological conflict, people are dying, people are dying. One of them is dying for something that's not true.
Yeah, I have a very simple answer to this, Steve. It's a two-word answer. Are you guys ready for it?
Yeah.
Heaven's Gate.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember this, but Heaven's Gate was a cult. I don't remember. I think they were based out of California, but
they were.
They all killed themselves in the late 90s because they believed that the Hale-Bopp comet was being trailed by a UFO and that the only way to be taken on board that UFO was to drink poison. Of course, it also meant that you had to live in bunk beds, wear the same clothes, and castrate yourself. But if we're going to go from this idea that somebody's willingness to die for an idea means that idea must be true.
So the 19 hijackers who crashed planes into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the field...
every suicide bomber that has ever blown themselves up.
They have just proven that Allah is God and Muhammad is his true prophet.
But other side of it is, did they really die for a lie? The only corroboration of the story we have is this single source.
And here's the real question, though, is the real problem I see with this is, it, like Sam, like you said, it doesn't prove that somebody believed in something that was true. It just means that they really, really believed in it.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
isn't really proof of anything. Just the same way, being willing to drink poison in your little cult house really does tell me that you believe that UFO was trailing the Hale-Bopp Comet.
Right.
Flying that plane into the building really does tell me you really, really believed that you're going to get those 72 virgins.
Well, let me ask you a question here, Mike. Since 100% of the Heaven's Gate people killed themselves, took the ultimate death to show what they believed, and a very small percentage of Christians actually die for their beliefs, does that mean the Heaven's Gaters were more righter than the Christians are right?
I would have to say yes. But here's the real question. What happens if you have two true believers willing to die in the defense of their beliefs, and they fight and they kill each other, and they have completely opposed views?
Both of them. We have two opposing views, but there can only be one truth. But if dying for your truth proves your truth to be right, and both people, what would happen?
I think the universe would break.
Clearly, we need some sort of metric for this.
Yeah.
We need a way to scientifically measure deaths as an increment of truth. How many people does it? How many people does it take? How many people have to die in order to prove an axiom? How many people have to die in order to make a fact mathematically correct?
I think I've got an increment for this. I think I'd like to call this an apple white.
Oh, jeez. All right, yeah.
I think the Heaven's Gate had, if we're going to go off percentage, they had 100 apple whites.
Right.
They were willing to kill all of themselves. And I don't know, I think actually, if we're just going to go not just by percentage, but adding numbers to that, I think the Jim Jones, they're actually even more true.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Oh,
okay. We've got...
and on that cheery note...
Yeah, let's go to the telephone. We have Caesar in upstate New York. Caesar, are you with us?
Yeah.
All right. Hi, what's your question, Caesar?
Well, it was actually not much of a question, much of like just to call in and say thank you for the podcast. It's incredible what you guys are doing. And thank you for always being every week,
Melly.
Every Sunday. It's always great to hear you guys.
Wow. Thank you for listening, and you know, thank you for appreciating what we're doing. It's kind of weird for saying, you know, thank you for the podcast after we just say something that, you know, we go into the metrics of dying for truth. But we've been at this what for 18 months now, or
at least a year and a half.
Yeah, and that's just for the part of the time we've been on the air. We've been working at this for like close to 3 years now. So
yeah, I know. I've been like. I just bumped into you guys out of a sudden, you know, after reading Dawkins and Hitchens, all of a sudden I just put Atheist in YouTube and all of a sudden, bam, you guys appeared.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That's actually very flattering because we have a lot of competition for that word on YouTube.
Especially on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah, actually, at first, the other one that popped in was the Atheist Community of Austin popped in too, but I loved looking at their videos. It was kind of like a dark... Like, I don't know what if it's lighting or something, but it was dark, and it's kind of like, you know, ooh, this is like, I like those guys, man. They're really
they're great guys. We talk to them a lot. Yeah. They're really great guys, and I can tell you in the case of their the lighting. I mean, they're cable. They're on the cable access network. We know how that is.
Oh yeah, yes. Yeah. You're using secondhand stuff.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is that you guys are always colorful, and you know, I don't know. I don't mean to put them down, but it's just always fun to listen to you guys.
Hey, well,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
You know, that nerdy kind of thing. Not to put you guys on.
Yeah, I can't dodge that, so we're pretty nerdy.
Yeah, well, just calling to say thanks, you know?
Well, thank
All
you.
Right. Hey, thank you very much. That's Caesar in upstate New York, and certainly glad to have him on the show today. You can call in, too. The number is 584-1480.
Area code 253.
253, yes. Yep. Area code 253-584-1480. And back to emails. The next one from David Cannon. And the subject is theism and ghosts. And we have our very own ghost hunter, ghost buster here. Official. You even have that little meter thing, right, Sam?
I do. I have a lot of the equipment that...
Are we talking about an e-meter or a PKE meter?
We're talking about... an oscilloscope and a field strength meter. It's kind of weird. There's this one movie that this all goes back to, like, this one movie my dad made me watch on HBO, some, you know, junk science fiction movie. And they were scanning for life forms. They were scanning, you know, like, oh, there might be life forms on this planet. We need to scan it before they go down. And they did it using the exact same model of guitar tuner my dad had. And ever since then, I've always kind of been weird about watching what they use for technology on TV shows. And when all these ghost shows started coming out, you know, and being on the air, a lot of the equipment they use is stuff I use for ham radio. Field strength meters, oscilloscopes, frequency counters, things like that. We use them to measure RF fields just as they purport to do.
Yeah.
But I'm finding actual RF fields. They're just trying to find, I don't know what they're looking for.
But when you find this stuff, you find, oh, I've got a blip. How do you know you're not just reading the stuff that this stuff is designed
sure.
to measure?
But
right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
There are ambient EM fields in the Earth. Like, for example, a very famous story is, and it's actually pretty well told in Barefaced Messiah, which is available on the internet, is the 3-day war L. Ron Hubbard had with a magnetic anomaly in Puget Sound.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just that their direction-finding equipment found an anomaly. They thought it was a U-boat. They depth-charged it. Turned out it was a well-known and well-documented magnetic anomaly. So, oh.
See, when I hear something like that, I get a little scared because I've seen Lost, and I know how this can go badly.
I'm pretty sure Lost is fiction.
It is, but okay. You don't want to mess around with a magnetic anomaly.
It still can go bad.
Yeah, and I mean, I've gone to local organizations with Case, you know, local, well, not with Case, but in addition to Case. We've been going to local groups that are doing ghost busting type stuff, and I'll say, well, I've got the equipment. I'm also a skeptic. Let me come with you. And so far, I've had no takers. So.
Well, let's see what he's got here. In the last 10 years, I've noticed a distinct rise in the number of television shows and internet videos of people who do supposed paranormal investigations. They try to act like they're being scientific about it, but I consider it to be a lot of bad theater. This makes me, you think? This makes me wonder if these ghost hunters,
scare quotes,
yes, are for the most part theists with an agenda to try to create, quote, evidence of an afterlife to try to bolster claims of the existence of God. What do you think?
Well, I know that for the most part, when I've watched these shows, that they are usually theists of one brand or another. There's usually two brands that come up. One are the hardcore Catholics. Because, as you know, Catholics love themselves some theater. That's why they have the most elaborate costumes of any theist group.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
And the other one is a sort of a little New Agey, you know, beardy types. And it's this weird coalition between the two groups. And there's one show that I know that Sam and I are big fans of a lot of these shows, but the one that really encapsulates this kind of coalition between the New Agers and the Catholics is Paranormal State, which I think is on the Sci-Fi Channel. Or it's on one of those shows. It's like the History Channel, the Discovery Channel. One of those channels that doesn't do a lot to do with history or discovery.
Right. That's a Travel Channel, I believe.
The Travel Channel has a ghost show. But yeah, the Paranormal State, basically what will happen is they'll have some big deal where everybody holds hands and has some kind of what is it, like a exorcism or some kind of ceremony where they kick the ghost out of the house. It's like handing him his papers.
And then my favorite is one called Ghost Adventures, which is hosted by this guy who looks like Henry Rollins and Keanu Reeves had a baby that did not go through the birth process well. And they get really mad and puffed up about everything. And they're like, they go into a room like they're going to beat up the ghost. Like, yeah, I'm going to beat you up, ghost.
Yeah, they actively threaten the ghost. They puff their chest out and they go into like that frat boy bro mode.
Yeah.
And what I love is that the minute they hear something on their scanners or a floor creaks or they think they hear some kind of, you know, some sort of static on one of their machines, they all turn into Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
I will challenge you on this, is I don't think their agenda is theism. I don't think theism really has anything to do with it, because theism is specifically an argument about God. What they are specifically is supernaturalists. What they want to convince you of is not the existence of God, but the existence of a spirit world, which is technically a different thing.
I agree. I don't think that there's an active agenda there. I think that the belief system they have, which is a supernaturalist one, which is a theistic one, involves these kind of supernatural elements. And that's why they buy into it. And I think that in the end, for all their talk about science and how they have these machines, they have a faith-based argument.
Yeah,
I think I talked to one of the heads of the Ghost Hunters of Washington, which they actually have an organization.
Yeah.
And he told me their purpose is to prove that there is no such thing as death. that this is just one aspect of life that we live, and that we've all lived much longer than this and have much longer to live, and there's no such thing as death, although there are different realms in which we live.
Right.
And that's what he told. Hey, we've got a phone call coming. We'll talk to Zach from Baltimore right after this.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
And we are back.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we do have a couple calls, right?
We absolutely do. We've got one just about the ghost hunters. Let's go to Charles in Charlotte, Illinois. Charles, are you with us?
Can
you start again?
It's Tuscola, T-U-S-C-O-L-A.
Tuscola. Where in Illinois is that?
Do you know where Champaign University of Illinois is?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time there, in fact.
Okay, we're 25 miles south of you.
Oh, okay, cool. So what do you have for us today?
Okay, from what I've heard, you're talking about ghost hunting and so forth, ghost visitation. If ghosts are spirits and things of that nature, what are all these people with all their ghost-finding equipment actually measuring? Apparently, they're not matter or energy. You know,
Actually, I can speak to some of this, especially in the case of the phenomenon they call EVPs. I forget what that stands for. But really, what they're measuring in this case and what they're listening to in this case is noise, is really, in some cases, digital sampling noise. Is that they're listening to noise that's beyond the capability of the recording equipment to really resolve, or is just noise that's being injected into the system because of grounding issues, or just because it's digital noise because it's a digital recording medium? Is that really, it's this lossy recording technology which is allowing these EVPs to come in place. Now, you combine that with the human psychological instinct for detecting patterns, and what you have is the perfect storm of voices in the dark.
Right. That's what I think they're getting. But what are they think they're getting?
They think they're getting ghosts.
Yeah. But how are they, you know, according to all the theology I ever heard, that spirits and ghosts and so forth are non-material, neither matter or energy.
Right.
So how do they explain them picking them up?
I think they just say it's magic.
It really is a lot of hand-waving. As Case likes to point out, these shows are really in three acts. The first act is they show you where they are. The second act is they act all scared. And the third act is they show you what they find. No research is ever done. No review is ever done. No falsification is ever done. And no real theory of what these things are has ever really been produced by any of these paranormal investigators.
And there's no resolution to any of these shows either. They just peter out at the end. It's like watching Monster at Go-Go.
Yeah.
Nothing happens in these shows.
I keep thinking, there's a major transformer having slightly out of specs because of atmospheric conditions, or there's a slight surge in the power lines or something like that.
Yeah.
Somebody thinks there's a demon on the loose.
Well, there's this one episode of Ghost Adventures where they're in this big old factory that's still filled with a lot of old electrical equipment. Of course you're going to find weird noises and weird ambient fields if you shoot RF at it. It's this big metal box. Of course you're going to get weird stuff. It's really, it's mind-boggling. I am not a scientist. I'm not I have some engineering training, but I wouldn't really call myself an engineer. And I can see through this immediately. I wonder at how this stuff gets on the air.
And I don't even have any of the scientific training that Sam has. I look at it in terms of these guys are making a supernatural explanation for something that to me has a very obvious naturalistic explanation. And the way I look at it is, yes, it could possibly be supernatural, but I'm not going to take that as a serious answer until one of these supernatural explanations is definitively proven. At that point, then you can put it on the table as a serious possibility. But until one of these mysteries that gets solved has a magical answer, magic's not a serious explanation.
Right.
That every time we've ever solved any mystery and really understood how something worked, guess what? It turned out to be not magic. So until you get that magic answer once, I'm going to laugh at it.
Yes. Always remember the simplest solution is usually the best one.
Yeah.
Occam's razor.
The other side of Occam's razor is it is the simplest explanation, but it's also the one that has the least amount of assumptions.
And that he put it like, don't multiply entities unnecessarily or something like that.
Yeah, the law of parsimony.
Yeah, exactly.
Or parsimony. Right. How am I pronouncing that?
I can't pronounce it either.
Yeah, all right, well.
All right, thanks, Charles, for joining us today. We've got another call. We've got Zach in Baltimore, so let's go to Baltimore. Zach, are you with us?
Hi, how you doing, guys?
All right,
pretty
how
good.
Are you?
I believe we've talked before.
We're doing great, yes, we've talked before. I've called him a couple times, actually.
Okay, I understand you're looking for advice on how to start an atheist blog.
Yeah, but before that, really quick, when you mentioned the thing about not being magic, were you by chance quoting Tim Minchin's Storm?
Yes, actually, I was. I'm a big Tim Minchin fan.
I love that bit. That's so clever. If anybody hasn't seen Storm, look it up.
Actually, I got to see it live, thanks to Rich Indiana.
Actually,
they took me to see it.
I would highly recommend, if you're listening to this show and you want to see a great poem, it's on YouTube. Look up Tim Minchin Storm.
Yeah,
as an illustration major, the animation is really good, too.
Oh, yeah,
it's great
actually,
stuff. Check it out.
Yeah.
What have you got for us?
I started an atheist blog maybe a couple of months ago, and it's sort of run dead. It's been on hiatus for a while now, and I'm thinking of kicking it back off again. But we wrote maybe a couple articles, me and a friend of mine started it, and we just sort of didn't acquire any readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there was like a lack of marketing or something, you know, like maybe I should put it on Reddit or I don't know what, but...
Reddit's a good start, but I mean, Reddit is internet culture condensed, so be prepared for that.
Yeah,
I'd say Reddit's a good place. Also, put it up on StumbleUpon.
Mm-hmm.
Also, put everything up on Facebook. Give everybody any opportunity to see this thing who wouldn't normally go specifically looking for it. Because mm-hmm. the beauty of even getting one person to share your blog entry on a place like Facebook is that every single person who's listed as their friend will see it. And some of them are going to be interested and click on it.
There's really two points that I would make. The first one is perseverance. I mean, you got to stick with it for a while. Having a history and sort of a deep view, people like that, and the longer that you're on the scene, the more attention you're going to get. The other thing is honor your craft. I mean, if you're going to write and you want people to read your writing, you got to be on top of your game for that. Is make it the best writing you can make it. And those are the two things that I try and pay attention to when I write for the blog.
As far as marketing, what I would recommend and what we've done with our podcast and what works very well is watch what's happening on the internet. And when you see other blogs like PZ Myers, when you see other people that are talking about similar things, make a note in the comments on their blog to that. When we got Ferangulated, we went from like 24 listeners to our podcast to 168 in one day, and then it went up from there. Now we're around 4,000. So by following what other people much larger than you are doing, another thing is call and have them as a guest. Call up, talk to the guy, or even email an interview with them. Use some of their quotes. Quote them in some of your articles. And by quoting them, number one, it gives your article credibility, and number two, it also, a lot of times, they will say, hey, I'm quoted in this article, go check it out, and that'll send tons of traffic to your site.
I wrote a big analysis of the episode of The Atheist Experience where they talked to Ray Comfort, and that was really fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh,
I've appreciated the fact that you haven't actually mentioned your blog yet. So since you haven't, I give you that opportunity now. Where could we find your blog?
It is actually, you know, considering that the idea spawned when I was in Japan after this, you know, tragedy, I came up with the name Thoughtquake.
Thoughtquake. Okay.
Thoughtquake.blogspot.com, and I think I will kick it off now that I've plugged it.
Yeah, and I really look forward to seeing your sort of your view, and especially your time in Japan sort of influence your blog.
One of my first articles is actually about that, so I'm really happy to hear you guys are excited about it. Before I go, I wanted to say that I was really hoping to get a week with Rich, because I wanted to say that I was really just completely moved by your story.
Well, thank you very much.
I was, like, the fact that you went from such a low place to such a high place is really, it speaks towards the sort of, like, I thought I was happy when I was a Christian. I thought I was really happy.
Totally.
And then And then I realized that there is such a higher level of happiness that I wasn't allowing myself to have.
Exactly. And you articulated that very well.
Yeah.
When you're in that mind think where everything is constricted and everything is restricted, you think you're happy within that, because that's what you're constantly told, is you're happy this way, you're happy this way.
Yeah, and that's all you know.
Yeah, but once you get out of that,
frame of reference.
Yeah, once you get out of that and you realize, I don't have someone monitoring every thought, so when that girl in yoga pants walks by, I can totally, I mean, you know, don't make yourself obvious and, you know, crawl behind her on all fours.
Don't get arrested.
Yeah, but you can totally let whatever go through your mind go through your mind, and nobody watches. And
yeah, you don't have to worry about thought crime. It's such a more peaceful day-to-day existence.
Absolutely.
Wow. I'm actually, kind of moved by the concept of a level of happiness denied to you because of your beliefs. I never really, I mean, it's sort of inherent in the idea, but I've never really thought of it in that way before. That's pretty, that's kind of scary.
Well, I won't hold you guys' phone up anymore, but I love the podcast, I love the radio show, I voted for you guys. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I love Living After Faith. I'll keep listening to both of them.
thank you very much, Zach.
Have a great day, guys.
You too. Yeah.
All right.
Wow, that was pretty...
Excellent. And yeah. Thank you for calling, Zach. We have a topic today, and our topic is kind of heavy, actually.
It is, yeah.
And but that's okay, because we got the heavy hitters here. We've got Sam Mulvey, and we've got Mike, and I always forget your last name.
My last name is Gillis.
Mike Gillis. I'm
going to
really
crawl away in shame now.
I'm off my game today, guys. I'm really...
That happens.
Oh, don't worry. We'll punish you later.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Make me drink beer.
Whether you do well or not, the whippings will commence. Anyway, here we go.
Our subject today is, what is church and state, the separation of church and state? What is it? Now, we hear this talked about often, you know, separation of church and state. But often when religious people are talking about it, it means one thing. When atheists are talking about it, it means something else. So let's take a look today. Let's tear church and state separation down. And what does it actually mean? And how does it affect us? And what is the status, the current status of separation of church and state? These are some of the things we're going to look at. So, Mike, church, separation of church and state.
Oh, I'd say if it's going to mean one thing, it's the principle that the government ought to stay neutral on matters of religion. That's if you want to take it down to just one sentence, that's it. The government doesn't endorse, it doesn't fund it, it doesn't step in to suppress the expression of somebody's beliefs unless those beliefs are actively breaking the law or abusing people. That's the only point. We don't step in and take a side on whether somebody's God is real, somebody's God is false, or somebody's religion is good and somebody's religion is bad, or somebody's non-religion.
Yeah.
I think Justice David Souter, he wrote in the majority for the Board of Education of Kiris Jewel Village, School District versus Grummet, and this is a description I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Government should not prefer one religion over another, or religion to irreligion.
That's important.
Yeah,
a lot of people who are really religious miss this point, and they seem to think like, oh, everyone can believe in a God, just a different God, and this is something that you atheists are exempt from, so your atheism is somehow not protected by the Constitution, not true.
Something I've encountered so many times by religionists is, well, doesn't the separation of church and state then support a secular society? Well, yeah, and secular is what you want, because secular does not owe any allegiance to any faith at all, and you are freely allowed to freely practice your faith.
And I think people miss the fact that secular and atheist are not the same thing.
Right.
They are
that,
not. Yeah.
It's exactly is the opposite. It doesn't take the side of the government outright saying there is no God any more than it takes the side that the government saying there is. What we're saying is government neutrality, that the government is not a pulpit for somebody to spew their religious beliefs or their anti-religious beliefs.
Right.
And again, this is the other thing, is that churches under a state with church-state separation has none of the legal authority of the state. It can't hijack it or enforce theological grievances or rules. Not over society at large, not even over its own church members. They can't jail somebody for breaking their church's rules. And people are allowed to leave their church.
Doesn't stop them from trying.
Oh, they certainly use all the social weapons in their arsenal to try to do that, to shame, to exclude you, to
fatwa.
I mean, actual threats of violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rich, you were excluded in almost number of ways. They can still that.
Absolutely.
But they can't actually jail or fine you for not
holding. But they will try. I mean, they're tithing. You know, there's a... religious courts in the United States that aren't legally binding, but people follow them. There's religious laws, and all these things exist.
Yeah, and we have to also recognize that we're in a very different place than the status of church and state than we were, say, even 400 years ago.
Yeah.
There used to be a point where the church was the state. I mean, it could do things like jail scientists like Galileo, who discovered things that contradicted church dogma. They were able to put blasphemers to death. They were able to suppress science. They killed members of other religions. They even went on like theological death and killing sprees. Things like the Inquisition. I mean, this stuff is just insane. And it's just sort of amazing that you only really need to look at states where the church and state are the same thing. You know, places like the Middle East, places like Saudi Arabia, and you will see exactly the sort of society that is built when the state has the powers of the church and the church has the powers of the state. I mean, you look at a place like Saudi Arabia, women are forbidden to drive or be alone with a male who isn't a husband or a relative. It's a state where people are put to death for just ridiculous things that you only see in Monty Python sketches, like blasphemy or witchcraft.
But even so, you still see some of that in America, you know, in Saudi Arabia, but you even see that here. And let me give you an example. In most states of the U.S., two gay men can't get married. That's a religious rule.
For explicitly religious things.
Yeah.
I mean, these things go down, and we're going to talk to somebody who knows a lot about church and state in just a little bit. We're going to get back to you. Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
October 21st. It's the end of the world. Atheists will be huddled in the darkness. With Kirk Cameron.
Join Seattle Atheists as we celebrate the end of our successful Rapture Relief campaign to benefit Camp Quest and to remind people that atheists care.
We scored the rights to Left Behind, and we'd like you to come laugh at it with us on October 21st in downtown Seattle.
Interruptions and inappropriate laughter are encouraged.
Go to seattleatheist.org and click Meetup.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on Meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas. Freely.
Join us after today's show at the Office Bar and Grill in downtown Tacoma. Offering a wide selection of tap and bottled beer, a full bar of your favorite liquor, and a taste bud tantalizing menu, come on down and shoot the breeze with the Ask an Atheist crew. Who can argue with your motives? After all, you're at the office. The Office Bar and Grill is at 813 Pacific Avenue in Tacoma.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist on KLAY. If you'd like to be part of the program today, the number to call, 253-584-1480. And we'll take your call and discuss all things godless.
Well, I'd like to talk about the Left Behind movie viewing event that Seattle Atheist is planning. I know it's a charity event for, it's sort of the wrap-up charity event for the end of the world stuff, which kind of sort of kicked off with your countdown to backpedaling bit way back in January.
Yeah, this is the, I guess, Plan B end of the world that, what was his name? Harold Camping.
Harold Camping, yeah.
There's something really seriously wrong with a world where somebody like Steve Jobs dies at 55.
Yeah.
This guy who's taking our technology into the next century.
Yeah, Stroke Master C here is in his 90s now.
Yeah, right? He makes it to 90, and he's using 20th century technology to spit out 11th century gibberish.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Why does people like him live forever?
$140 million net media empire, something like that. Well, yeah, the first time was when the world was, Jesus was supposed to return, and sort of the Broadway run of the Earth was to end. And then in October is apparently when the set is struck.
Yeah, this is a bit like that Spider-Man musical. It's a huge disaster. Nothing happens. And it drags out. And guess what? It still sucks.
Yeah. And that's kind of where he is right now. You know, yeah. His theology went wrong the first shot. And then he went right back into, here's what really happened. Well, he's totally out on a limb here. No one who preaches the end of the world stuff preached anything like an invisible rapture, which he says happened back in May, and an invisible judgment. And the none
no,
of that
he's at
was
the end
ever.
Of his rope, but he's also a liar because he said he was done with the public statements.
Yeah.
That's true.
The really sad thing with this is that he's making claims that are demonstrably false. He already said that we'd have a zombie apocalypse and a major earthquake. But this time, this is one that he can't miss. He actually says the world will end on October 21st.
And the part I want to focus on here, really, is the Left Behind movie hilarious.
Yes.
I mean, it's going to be a full... I'm not saying it's going to be MST3K quality work, but it's going to be... It's going to be pretty fun. So, those of you in the Seattle-Tacoma area, I would, you know, come on out and join us at the 2100 building up in Seattle. So, yeah, I think it'll be great.
Hey, we actually have a very important person on the line. Rob Boston, he's the author of books like Why the Religious Right is Wrong About the Separation of Church and State and The Most Dangerous Man in America, Pat Robertson and the Rise of the Christian Coalition. He currently serves on the board of the American Humanist Association and is a senior policy analyst for Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Rob Boston, welcome to Ask an Atheist.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
So I guess the first question that I'd have to ask you is, there are a lot of people out there that say the separation of church doesn't exist or it only exists for Christians. What would you say to that?
Right, yeah, I hear that one a lot. Well, their beef is with people like James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and other founders who gave us a theory of religious liberty built upon a wall of separation between church and state. I mean, that was the metaphor used by Thomas Jefferson. It's something that's been embraced by the courts for a long time. And so when I hear that argument, really, I say, well, your problem isn't with me or my organization. It's with the founding fathers.
Yeah, But, Rob, weren't the founding fathers all fundamentalist Christians who wanted to build a Christian republic?
I know. It's funny that you hear that the religious right say that, yet the founding fathers somehow managed to write an entire constitution that does not at once mention the word Christianity, Jesus Christ, or God. Again, I say to these folks, if your theory or your argument is that we're a Christian nation, you need to show me that in our founding document. You know, don't point to some other document don't point to the reference to the Creator and the Declaration of Independence.
I was going to ask that. As how often do people conflate that line in the Declaration of Independence with the Constitution?
Oh, they do it constantly. Now, you know, there are reasons why that's in there. People, I think, get confused about what the Declaration of Independence was designed to do. It was announcing to the world that we were separating from Great Britain and that we were serious about it and we meant it. It's not a governance document. You know, if you run into trouble with the law, you don't have any rights under the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
You have rights under the Constitution. So while the Declaration is extremely important and obviously something that Americans should be familiar with, it doesn't establish a system of government. That's what the Constitution does. So we have to keep going back to that, and that's the argument that some of these folks on the religious right don't want to have because they can't win it.
So the Declaration of Independence was basically the invitation to America's coming out party, is what you're saying.
Yeah, actually it was. I mean, it was saying to the world, you know, we're dumping these guys in Great Britain, and we want your support. You know, the deistic reference to the Creator, which appears in there, I mean, first of all, it isn't even Christian.
Right.
It's deistic. It did not appear in Thomas Jefferson's first draft. It isn't clear who put it in there, how it got in there, whether it was Jefferson's doing or somebody else's, but at best, as I say, it's a very deistic reference to begin with.
Yeah, and you really don't have to look that hard to find a lot of statements from the founders where they tell you exactly what they tend to think of organized religion or of Christianity in particular. I wouldn't say they're atheists. They're usually deists, but clearly these guys aren't the sort of people that would want to create a theocracy.
Well, no, actually, my favorite is Jefferson, who later in his life, after he left public office, had this large correspondence with many people, including John Adams, and they talked openly about religion. And in one letter Jefferson wrote to a friend, William Short, he listed everything he did not believe in Orthodox Christianity, and essentially it was the entirety of Orthodox Christianity. Yeah, he rejected the Trinity, he rejected the virgin birth, he rejected the divinity of Jesus, he rejected the idea that Jesus was divine and performed miracles. Now, again, he wasn't an atheist. You guys have pointed that out. You're right. He believed in this kind of sort of deistic God that watched over us and so on. He might have even believed in an afterlife, but to say that he was some kind of Jerry Falwell in a powdered wig and stockings is that's ridiculous.
So what do you think are the biggest misconceptions that people tend to have about church-state separation?
Well, the big one would be the one we've already discussed, that we were founded as a Christian nation, and you would be surprised how many people actually do think that's in the Constitution. They obviously haven't read the document. But the second one, I think, is that separation of church and state is somehow hostile to religion or that it hurts religion. Actually, from the perspective of our organization, separation of church and state has been a great boon for religion.
Yeah.
If you look at this country and compare us to some of the European nations that retain the state-established church, our religious life is a lot more vital. I sometimes jokingly say when I'm giving speeches, you know, we are often accused of wanting to destroy religion. Well, if that's really what we wanted to do, we would be advocating for a state church because that will do it every time.
Yeah, that really does seem to be the case, that you have a state church in much of, say, Scandinavia or the UK, and taxes go to pay for those churches, and then on Sunday they're empty.
Right, exactly. There are people in the UK right now, jokingly, obviously, identifying themselves as Jedi Knights for their religion,
yeah.
And they're actually almost outpacing the members of the Church of England.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that the numbers had fallen
that's,
that way.
That's actually
well,
terrible.
Well, bring that into Pastafarians, too. It gets pretty, you know, they're giving them a run for it.
So I know that, Rob, you actually went to the Value Voter Summit. How would you describe, what is this Value Voter Summit?
It's indescribable. I was there Friday and Saturday. I was late on Saturday night. I stayed till around 10 o'clock. I stayed till the bitter end. I went to a banquet honoring Ed Meese.
Oh, jeez.
Wow!
Yeah, I'm still going through detox, so remember that, guys.
Jeez.
I'm a little fragile. It's just remarkable. I mean, speaker after speaker, just this fulminating, extreme, fundamentalist right-wing stuff. And, of course, they had all the major Republican presidential candidates there seeking the votes of this constituency, top leaders in Congress, members of the House, members of the Senate, you know, a lot of attacks on President Obama, a lot of attacks on non-believers, a lot of attacks on anybody who thinks differently than these folks do. It's just it's remarkable. And the one thing that I really get that strikes me from this is just the rage and the hate that these people feel.
Yeah.
They don't like gay people. They don't like non-believers. They don't like non-Christians. They don't like anybody that they perceive to be un-American. And there's just a lot of rage out there. Yet they claim to be the people who love America, and they're the true patriots. It's just astounding.
They love America the most because, especially with their divergent history they've got going on. But you know, I mean, that just blows me away. And for a religions that apparently espouse the concepts of love and peace, a lot of times the proponents of these guys. Are the proponents of this style of religion, this dominionist arm, talks about hate and get rid of these people and these other people and these other people, and everything needs to be constrained. And I just don't understand it a lot of the time.
Well, you know, it's remarkable. I've been thinking about this because I've actually been doing some writing. You know, while the wounds are still fresh in my mind, I'm doing some writing about this event, which will appear on our website shortly. But basically, this is a movement that's taken Jesus, and they've sort of remade him in their own image. You know, if you read the Bible, Jesus was kind of this, you know, he was kind of socialistic, if you think about it, always telling people to give away their possessions and take care of the poor and be concerned about the least among us. And they've turned him into this hyper-capitalist who favors a good business climate and wants no taxes. And that's their Jesus. Or, alternatively, I sometimes think, they've actually sort of replaced Jesus with a new God. And
right.
This God is, I call him the deified Ronald Reagan. I mean, that's really it's kind of like one of the old Roman cults where you had all these different gods and you could worship at whatever temple you wanted. Well, theirs is the temple of the deified Ronald Reagan, because at these meetings, you might hear Jesus' name mentioned, you know, three or four times, and I'm not joking, I mean, that infrequently, but you hear Ronald Reagan invoked every 5 or 6 minutes. That's their God.
Has there been any evidence of sort of an actual mystical cult arising around Reagan? I do wonder about that. I mean, to try not to get political, but the way people talk about Ronald Reagan, it sometimes does take on this mystical quality.
Yeah, I think it's only a matter of time. I was kind of joking with my wife that Ed Meese is so favored by them because for so many years he sat at the right hand of the father. And there are some rumors that Meese had the power to cure scrofula just by touching people. So, you know, you get these kind of beliefs out there, and they're pretty far out.
So I have to ask, Rob, after going to something like this and doing all the work that you do for Americans United, is the religious right getting stronger, or is this just the dying, thrashing screams of an animal that's being put down?
Boy, I wish that were the case, but I think of them as a political version of wallpaper. It's just there, it's going to stay there, and you might not even notice it, but it's a part of your life.
Can you paint over
A lot of people made the mistake of saying after the 2008 elections that they were finished, there had been a new political realignment. But I knew that was nonsense because I heard the same thing in 1992 and 1996.
Yeah.
And each time they came roaring back. This time, thanks to the Tea Party movement, which they're trying to link up with, they came back really quickly. One of the things that this Values Voter Summit they're talking about doing is they already have two political action committees. Well, now they're forming a super PAC. And as you know, the super PACs can collect unlimited amount of money from corporations and individuals and just plow those right into races. And Meese, during his remarks at this banquet, talked about this conglomeration of groups from the secular and the far religious right that gets together every Wednesday to plot strategy. So there's a lot of money there. There's a lot of power there. They have the ability to attract top political leaders in this country to come to them and beg for their support. So no one should think that this is a dying movement. Now, over the long haul, I do think their influence will decline as America becomes more secular. But when I say long haul, I really mean long haul. I mean 50, 100 years.
So I know the money's there, the organization is there, they've got a lot of people, but do they really represent a huge portion of the American people? Can one of these people actually become president?
Well, they don't represent a huge portion of the American people. That's what's so alarming about this. But the reason they have such influence is they are very good at getting out the vote. They turn up for every election. They mobilize in their churches. They mobilize in their neighborhoods among friends. They have sophisticated networks where they're using social media and other tools to get people out to vote. And politicians aren't stupid. They know this. We're living in a country right now where half of the people, as we sit here talking now, aren't even registered to vote. And on election day, only half of that half will show up. So you can see how a small group can have a disproportionate amount of influence simply by mobilizing people. Now, there's nothing wrong or immoral or illegal about that. It's good, old-fashioned politics. Those of us who are concerned about the influence of the religious right need to be thinking along the same line. Now, you ask, could one of them become president? Well, you know, there are candidates running in their field right now that I think are not likely to become president. Herman Cain was very well received at this meeting. He's a very powerful speaker. If I were a conservative religious right guy, I would have been swept away by him, too. But he's not likely to become our next president. But could a Rick Perry become our next president? It could a Mitt Romney, somebody who talks about social issues and who throws the red meat out on occasion? Yeah, I think that's certainly something that could happen.
So I guess the question I have then is, what in this sort of climate, what is Americans United doing to combat this, and how can somebody get involved?
Well, we are a nonprofit organization, so we're not allowed to do direct political work. We're not allowed to be involved in candidates. We're not allowed to be involved in races, and we scrupulously follow those rules. But what we try to do is educate people about the importance of separation of church and state, debunk the religious right lies, debunk the claims that, you know, separation is hostile to religion. And there are lots of different ways we do that. We are allowed to do some lobbying. We have chapters around the country. We have publications we produce. There's our website. If folks want to get involved, I would say the best thing to do is just check out our site, which is very simple, au.org. Go to au.org. You can see what we're doing there. You can find out there's a chapter in your area. You can get involved locally. We need people in the States because we're based in Washington. We may not know what's going on in another part of the country. So if we have activists locally, they keep us informed, and then we can help them fight local church-state battles. So there's a lot that people can do. They just need to get out there and get involved. I know not everybody's crazy about this type of work. People get frustrated. But if we do nothing, then we are saying basically to the religious right, well, the field is yours. Do what you like with it.
I couldn't agree more. Rob Boston, I want to thank you again for coming on Ask an Atheist. Rob Boston is the Senior Policy Analyst for Americans United for Separation, Church and State. Rob, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. This was really enlightening. Yeah.
Take care.
Wow, I'd have him back on in a split second. That was great.
Yeah, AU is a great organization. If you want to get involved in a great nonprofit group, Americans United for Separation, Church and State, AU.org, it's a great group to get involved with. Not only that, they're incredibly nonpartisan, too. So it isn't just we're picking fights with one side. They hit it hard.
And that was a very good summary of the separation of church and state, which is something that's very much misunderstood a lot, specifically in our culture.
All right, that's the time we got today. Our host today was Rich Lyons. My name is Sam Moldy. With me is Mike Gillis. Our music is by Chris Coleman. Our call screener was Darren Garvin. Our production assistants were Scott Leopold, Rebecca Friedman, and Deanna Joy Lyons. Ask an Atheist is an ADM Media production. You can see us at askanatheist.tv. Our voicemail number is 206-420-0997. We'll see you next week.
Keeping you informed, this is KLAY.